This is 2.1, a Netrunner Reboot Project podcast, episode 48, Through Your Own Mind. Hey, this is Remy. The title card for this week's episode is Jirai Labyrinth, the very often mispronounced card. We see Jiri. It's none of that is correct. I looked it up. I know. And the flavor text for this piece of ice is, once inside, the only way out is through your own mind. Which is all really cool and everything for an ice that's not all that great. So we're continuing our episode from last time, where we're reviewing the ice in Double Time, Jirai Labyrinth being one of those. And then we'll go on and take a look at some of the notable themes and cycles in the spin cycle for the corpse side. But first, an anonymous tip that I promised a couple of weeks ago. Anonymous tip. So you want to be a siphon spammer. I know this doesn't really fit in the corp part of an episode, but here we are. It's a little article that Zaley wrote for us, and I'm just going to read directly what she had to write. Siphon Lock. The Siphon Lock runner is looking to use account siphon to bring the corp beneath some threshold such that they cannot put up a meaningful defense and keep them there for as long as possible to close the game. Generally, this is combined with heavy disruption and or R&D threat to target the server that is not HQ and thus cannot provide double returns on defense spending. Ice destruction and emergency shutdown can also be used to keep the next siphon profitable. The other component of this style is the ability to play siphon more than three times somehow, whether that be through recursion or vamp. Which runners can play this? Siphon Max, Siphon Quetzal, Gabe, Silhouette, Mopus Lila. Enabling cards. Keyhole, Medium, Deja Vu, Same Old Thing, Emergency Shutdown, Cutlery Suite, Parasite, Legwork. Yeah, so obviously there's some of these cards that we don't have yet, but this was written for everybody. I'm just co-opting it for us. Fast Siphon. Siphon is good, so why not try to land it as early as possible? Once the corp is behind, it's easier to snowball ahead in the econ race. This is more true against some corp factions than others. Siphoning quickly means a simple and cheap, effective breaker suite. Breaker suites with high install costs or setup time slow down that crucial first siphon. Once the first siphon lands, it's even possible to transition to a more efficient rig. It turns out that accessing cards with Desperado is also generally a good play, and getting the corp low on credits allows the runner to do more of it in the early game. Which runners can play this? Kaisa Max? Ken? Most Siphon Lock runners. Enabling cards. Corroder. Zoo. That's Zoo.13 Keymaster, or Zool Keymaster. Fairy. Special Order. Desperado. Eater. Knight. Tempo Siphon. Sometimes you can't play Siphon early, but you are definitely still playing it. Yup. Well, let me tell you, Siphon is still very good when you play it after the corp has set up their defense of HQ. There are exceptions. Caprice is a problem, but you can beat her. 40 credits is probably too large of a gap to overcome. The corp should have enough money, exactly the cost to res their ice and all their assets with 5 to spare. Insurmountable gaps can seem suddenly inconsequential after 2 back-to-back siphons. This is a predicament for them. If they res everything, then they are broke, and it's time for the lock. If they don't, you are getting in on the cheap. Combine this with an emergency shutdown, the corp will have to slow down again to defend and hopefully give up accesses and the game. Any runner can do this move, but it's a core plan out of Andy Sucker, Ian, Slow Leela. Enabling cards, R&D interface, emergency shutdown, Logos, Ian, efficient breakers like Yogg.0 and Gordian, Pad Tap. How to beat Siphon? TBD. Tips and tricks. The corp slows down. To defend, the agendas will build up in HQ. Keep track of the cards remaining in their deck so you have an idea of how many they might have. The corp can't res assets or upgrades to duck the Siphon if they don't have assets or upgrades. Keep the remote clear, if at all possible. The corp trashing must-trash runner resources is generally a good trade for the runner. Make sure to capitalize. Don't play into Crisium. Play around it. Fast Siphon style is good here. One Crisium shouldn't be enough to stop you. Make full use of the turn that Siphon is played. That is Zaylee's article. She won the most recent regional champs. So you want to be a Siphon spammer. Ice Analyzer. New ice options in Double Time. It's a big pack for ice. There's 5 new options, including at least one that is excellent. So I'll save that one for last and start with Gyri Labyrinth. So what does this do? Seemingly not much. It doesn't end the run, so it's a taxing ice of some kind, and the tax is to reduce the runner's hand size by 2 until the beginning of your next turn. So, at the end of the runner's turn, typically their hand size is reduced to 3, then it immediately bounces back up to 5 at the beginning of your next turn. So, in a way, you're sort of doing 2 net damage, right? Because they'll need to end their turn on 3 cards. Of course, it's not exactly 2 net damage because they can play around that by playing other cards so that it's not actual net damage. They don't lose actual cards. It is an annoyance, though, and another bit of cognitive load. And then you think, too, that if they only have 3 cards in hand, it makes them more vulnerable to attacks that the corp can do. And that might be the entire point of it. But it's only 2 strength, so everything breaks it for 1 or 2 credits, which means that it's strictly a binary taxing ice, and so probably just something you're going to see in the early game. There, you may get the subroutines to fire more frequently, because I don't know how many people would just go find their decoder just to deal with this. They'd probably just play around it. Well, then again, depending on the corp you are, maybe they do, if they're worried about going into your turn with only 3 cards in hand. So again, it could be funny. In a deck running Scorched Earth as a code gate that makes the runner jump. A Fluffy One, in his review, highlighted some other cards that we don't have yet, like an HBID that also reduces the runner's hand size by 1, or the Jinteki 5 Influence Executive we're getting in the next deluxe box that reduces the hand size by 2. And so he ultimately rates this card as a 5. But in faction currently, you'd probably want it alongside some brain damage options, so that you're reducing the runner's hand size even more. Because it says reduced by 2, not a 3-card hand, right? So if they have 1 brain damage already, well, now they're having to discard down to 2 cards. That suggests a position later in the game where you've already landed some brain damage, and at that point, his ability will have been obviated. Still, thanks to the reboot change dropping it to a 0 cost, at least there's very little cost to the corp for using it. I mean, aside from the cost of the deck slot. Let's talk about Marker, the Jinteki code gate. Do you remember Sensei? Yeah, me either, despite the fact that I named episode 12 after its flavor text. Sensei's subroutine adds an end-the-run subroutine after every other ice encountered during the run. Marker basically does the same thing, but only on the next ice. Now, originally, Sensei was 3 to res, 5 strength, and marker was 0 to res for 3 strength. So it was smaller. Now sensei is 0 to res for 5 strength, and marker is 0 to res for 6 strength. So interestingly, marker is a higher strength, but does less, whereas before it was just a smaller version of sensei. Now I'm going to include a comment from NetrunnerDB from Pure Flight, where he says, if marker is in front of a barrier, it is redundant. The barrier already ends the run, so it doesn't really change anything. If the runner has a fracture, they can already get through, and if they don't, they can't. If marker is in front of a code gate, and the runner doesn't have a decoder, it might help stop the runner from proceeding. It is best if the code gate stings upon face-checking it, although that list is short. Even if the runner jacks out after encountering marker, it has done its job. If marker is in front of a sentry, and the runner doesn't have a decoder or a killer, you have done a great thing. Also, why didn't they jack out? Also, why were they running against Jinteki without a sentry breaker? So yes, it's redundant if it's in front of a barrier. This is me now, again, talking. Although it does add an additional subroutine to that barrier, so maybe your corroder costs one more credit. Or if you put it in front of a bioroid, it's less clickable. Marker or sensei in front of Eli is probably pretty ugly. In front of a code gate, you've now given that code gate an end the run subroutine. Is that good? More to the point, is the runner going to break the marker subroutine, especially now that it's strength 6, just to avoid having to break an extra subroutine on the code gate that follows it? Well, that sounds nonsensical. You'd just pay the extra credit to break the next dice. Of course, if you can't, that turns any code gate from what it was into an end the run. Now, currently, there are only 4 end the run code gates, 11 that are not. And it seems weird to pack 2 pieces of ice just to have an end the run subroutine, but it's not absolutely nothing. To me, though, in front of a sentry is probably the best use case, since sentries are the most abundant ice, but also the least likely to end the run. There are 4 end the run sentries, but 22 that do not. And, perhaps crucially, end the run sentries are expensive. Roto Turret is 4, Fenris is 4 and gives a bad publicity, Archer is 4 and costs an agenda, and Tsurugi is 5. Meanwhile, there are lots of little sentries that are fairly cheap, but they just don't end the run. So, how about a little 1-2 punch of marker, you know, or sensei, and hunter? Right, for 2 clicks and 2 credits, 1-2 install and res the hunter, 1-2 install and res the marker or sensei. That's a pretty beefy, inexpensive end-the-run combo. You got the 5 or 6 strength of the code gate, depending on whether you're using sensei or marker, and the 5 strength of hunter, and it's end-the-run. Now, the runner can get through all of this with either a decoder or a killer, but, I mean, I don't know. Doesn't a 2 cost, 5 strength, end-the-run sentry sound kind of good? I mean, I know. Intellectually, it's not good, but it doesn't sound awful to me. Sell me on this thing actually being awful. Let's move on to the other Jinteki Ice, Shinobi. It is among the most taxing of all sentries. Only Ichi 2, Archer, and Janus cost more to break than Shinobi. And face-checking this one is pretty rough for the runner. They'll have to pay 6 credits to beat all the traces, and that's if the corp, you don't boost any of them. But it also costs 6 credits for our baseline killer, Garrot, just to break them all. Ninja will do it for 5. Dagger can do it for 4. Fairy can get through for 3. Deus Ex can also do work here because Shinobi is AP. Although, of course, after the first interaction, the runner will have at least 1 bad publicity to work with. For categorization purposes, this would still be considered taxing ice rather than end-the-run ice, even though it has an end-the-run subroutine, because the ETR is attached to a trace. So the runner can pay through the trace. And for the most part, the tax is the point. since resing this as a face check ice, engine techie no less, is going to be real tricky in the early part of the game given its cost, even though it is one credit less than it used to be. Still, six is a lot to spend early in the game. Fluffy One points out in his review of the card that this tax is considerably less if the runner has even one link. Professor and Exile and Reyna all have one link built in, and so do two of the runners from the next box and the one from the next cycle. And so one link means that each of those traces costs one less. Now it's not a tax of six, it's a tax of three. A Netrunner DB review from Hatman in November of 2014, which is most of the way through the next cycle, goes like this. Shinobi should be viewed as an alternate win condition that masquerades as an ice. Its existence on the field, rezzed or not, requires that the runner play carefully. Jinteki ice has been called porous more times than it's been played. This trend continued with their tracer ice Shinobi, which had the unfortunate side effect of being illicit as well. He then says, for having both tracer and illicit, it does seem overcosted by one. Which is interesting, because, of course, reboot reduces the cost by one. However, without manipulating hand size, a single trigger of all three traces will win the corp the game. The math for getting all traces to fire is simple enough. Think of all the runner's link and credits as a stack of tokens. You want your trace strength to be higher than that stack by one. So to get all traces to fire on the turn you res the card, you'd need 7 credits to res the card, well, now 6, plus x minus 1, and x minus 2 credits, where x is their link plus credits. So to get all three traces to fire, you'd need, if they have one link or credit, 7 credits. 9 if they have 2 link or credit, and he says 4 plus 3x otherwise. I think it's actually 3 plus 3x if it's the cheaper version of the card. Maybe I should stop doing math on the fly. This, however, is the worst use of this card. Jinteki has plenty of cards that deal damage or make runs with a large hand more painful, such as Komainu, which comes in the next box, Neural Katana, Tsurugi, and Psychic Field, which also comes in the next box. The runner, to keep his entire turn from turning into a draw fest, will likely be running with 4 or fewer cards in hand, in which case the first subroutine becomes unimportant. The math switches to a more favorable 4 plus 2x to flatline the runner. And again, I think that might be 3 plus 2x. I should have done that math ahead of time. At 2 cards in hand, it becomes 5 plus x. If they have to spend credits to beat the first two traces, all the better. The runner, of course, could always break the subroutines on Shinobi with enough credits. This is fairly expensive. As of the time of writing this, the cheapest way to break subroutines is via Deus Ex, which works a single time, or via Fairy for 3 credits, a single time. If the ice is being run in Jinteki, these cards should be used by the runner regularly, leaving you with programs like Ninja or Mimic, which require more resources. This ice then is better suited to being played behind positional ice, like Chum, or Inazuma, also coming in the next box, to make the runner spend resources or else strengthen Shinobi. As such, this ice is a very unlikely splash, though NBN Making News may try for it. Much has been made over the bad publicity the ice gives out while rezzed. Remember that the bad publicity, though instant, won't give the runner credits in the middle of the run, keeping the math in the corp's favor. In general, rezzing this should only come at the end of a runner's life, since bad publicity is wildly anti-synergistic to a tracer ice. A deck with clone retirement might want to bring it online early, but I've found the uncertainty between Komainu and Shinobi useful in dissuading runs. The best card to compare Shinobi to is Scorched Earth. Both cards set up alternate win conditions for the corp, and both can lead to a sudden win out of seemingly nowhere. but both are undercut by careful runner play. Scorched earth is typically played against with plowscrete carapace, and both players deftly maneuvering around the possible play by manipulating tags. Shinobi, on the other hand, requires the correct number of credits, cards in hand, and a run on the correct server. As such, the placement is key. Putting it on a scoring server often means the runner is forked between losing points and losing the game. And without expose effects, the runner often doesn't even know it. Hive. The last three cards all received buffs, but this one and the next one are both unchanged. Hive is an interesting reversal of the Wayland Ice Suite, where you can add subroutines by advancing it, which are largely terrible. And here instead you subtract subroutines by scoring. Before having scored anything, what you have is a 3-strength barrier with 5 end-the-run subroutines. That will cost Corroder 6 credits to get past. So we would group this as an analog end-the-run ice. But that's only at the start of the game. You score a 2-pointer, and now it's only going to cost Corroder 4. And once you have 5 points, it becomes blank. I mean, unless you have Sensei and or Marker in front of it, I guess, which would kind of make for a funny server. So obviously you want to res this early, but 5 credits is a big ask in the early game. Then again, 6 credits is a pretty big ask of the runner early too. So presumably a rush deck wants it, and I could see it going into the super modernism build. The third version of that I discussed a couple episodes back has 3 ice wall, 2 wall of static, and a bastion for the barrier suite. And presumably, you could just swap the bastion for Hive, right? It's in factions, only costs 1 more. Grendel definitely has the money for it. In that thread, some of the players at the time tried it, but the deck's designer did not, and neither did the big boy put it in the YOLO precon. There, he's only got 5 barriers rather than 6, and it's 3 ice wall, 1 wall of static, and 1 firewall, which is a 4-cost, 5-strength version of ice wall, rather than this 5-cost, 3-strength version of, I guess, of big wall of static. And now Quandary. Quandary is a very simple thing. An extremely cheap code gate, it costs you 1 to res, that everything can break for minimal cost. We could compare it to Wraparound, it costs 1 less than Wraparound, or an unadvanced ice wall, which costs the same. But the key difference is it is a binary end-the-run code gate, so it forces the runner to go find a decoder. Generally, decoders are more expensive than fractors. So really, in that way, it's actually more comparable to Next Bronze, assuming it's the only Next out. But it costs 1 less, and it's neutral. Of course, the actual real comparison is to Enigma. Enigma, of course, is quite good. It's 3 cost for 2 strength and 2 subroutines. But Quandary is just a little bit better. It only costs 1, and that can be very important in the early game. Here is another review from NetrunnerDB, this time from user Zaytan, from, again, Zetan, from November of 2014. He says, "This is my favorite ice. I've been playing NBN since shortly after Core, back before it got any good. I was splashing Ice Wall just because it was a 1-credit ice that ended the run. Even though barriers are the easiest and least expensive ice to break, it was still worth it to keep them out for a few turns until they got a Corroder out. And then this beauty came along. Now, for 1 credit, and more importantly, 0 influence, I can get a run-ending ice. Not only that, it's a code gate. Decoders like Gordian Blade cost twice as much as Corroder to play, and that's a bigger deal than you might think in the early game. Sure, there are other decoders, but none without some kind of downside. At the end of the day, code gates are just straight up harder to break than barriers, especially in the early game. And the 0 strength? Who cares? Unless a code gate has a strength of 3 or more, Gordian is going to break it for 1 credit anyway. Some people will still argue for Enigma, the closest comparison to this card. Yes, the first time they hit it, Enigma will probably drain a click. And yes, if they're running on any click except for the last one, it will cost 2 credits instead of 1 to break with Gordian. Is that worth 2 extra credits to rez? Not even a little bit. Not to me, anyway. Cheap ice will hold them off for a few turns while you build things up. It's easier to make money if you already have money. Restructure is the perfect example of this. So if you're not wasting 2 extra credits on keeping them out in the early turns, you are 2 credits closer to reaching the filthy rich stage of the game, which isn't as far away as you think. All in all, as I said before, this is my favorite ice. It has been a 3-of in every corp deck I've built since it came out, and that isn't likely to change. And back to me now, as a reminder, the big boy rated this as the 37th best card in the game, and Enigma was number 40. Accelerated Diagnostics, a cycle set analysis. Let's talk about doubles and bad publicity. First of all, the doubles. There are 8 corp double operations that appeared in this cycle. Here they are quickly with their adjustments and costs. Celebrity Gift, unchanged at 3. Invasion of Privacy, reduced from 2 to 0. Shipment from Sansan and Interns, unchanged at 0. Blue level clearance, unchanged cost at 2. It gives you an extra credit, though. Reclamation Order, unchanged at 1. Corporate Shuffle, unchanged at 0, although it gives you an extra card. And Witness Tampering, reduced from 4 to 1, the biggest buff by far. So, as with the runner side, most of the corp doubles in the card pool are in this cycle. A 10 out of 13 total for the runner, 8 out of 12 total for the corp. They'll get 1 in the next deluxe box, they'll get 2 more in the second half of the next cycle, and then the final deluxe gives them a final double. Of these 8 corp doubles in this cycle, only 4 received an adjustment. That's better than the runners got. The runners had 7 out of 10 adjusted. And 2 of those adjustments are fairly small here for the corps. Corporate Shuffle goes from redrawing 5 cards to redrawing 6. Blue level clearance gains an extra credit. Those are both good. Invasion of Privacy and Witness Tampering got heavier buffs in a 2 and 3 cost play reduction, respectively. Now, as far as distribution, we see that NBN got 3 doubles with influence costs of 1, 2, and 3. HB got 2 with influence costs of 2 each. Jinteki just gets 1, which has 3 influence. And Wayland just gets 1, and it only has 1 influence. And there's a neutral one. But then, not only are there 3 NBN doubles more than the rest, but of the remaining 4, 2 of them are also NBN. But I think all of this generally makes sense. Right? There are fewer doubles for the corp than the runner. The influence costs are generally lower. The original costs are generally lower. The FFG made them originally lower, and they've been made lower still by reboot. Because a double takes up half a runner's available clicks, but 2/3 of the clicks for the corp. So they're going to be less useful to the corp. Like I did with the runner doubles, let me do a rapid fire review and review of the doubles we have so far. As a reminder, here they are in order of increasing cost. So for 2 clicks and 0 credits and 0 influence, Interns will install a card from Archives or HQ for no install cost. For 1 influence, Shipment from Sansan lets you place up to 2 advancement tokens on a card that can be advanced. For 2 influence, Corporate Shuffle lets you shuffle all cards from HQ into R&D and then draw 6. And for 3 influence, Invasion of Privacy lets you do a Trace 2, where you reveal the runner's grip and trash resources or events up to the difference between your trace and their link, but if you are unsuccessful, you'll take a bad publicity. Those all cost you 0 credits. For two clicks and one credit and one influence, witness tampering lets you remove up to two bad publicity. For two influence, reclamation order lets you grab all copies of a card from archives and pull them into HQ. For two clicks and two credits and two influence, blue level clearance will let you gain six credits now, although it's a net gain of only four, and draw two cards. And for two clicks and three credits and three influence, celebrity gift will let you reveal up to five cards in HQ and then gain two credits per card you reveal, which is a net of seven if you reveal all five possible cards. So here's my quick review, my quick take on each of these cards. Interns. I know it's best known for the cerebral imaging combos, but it seems pretty good for adding extra ice to a big tower or for some quick and dirty recursion of an ash or something. At that point, it just functions like an archived memories. Shipping from Sansan seems pretty good. It doesn't actually advance you more quickly, but it saves you two credits. That could be really nice early or if you're low on money. Corporate Shuffle got some rave reviews when it was released from the casual part of the community, but I just don't really see a use case for it, such that I'd include it in a deck. I guess it's a quick draw of six cards if you've run your hand out completely. Invasion of Privacy could be devastating if it weren't limited to just resources and events. Witness Tampering is quite fine in a deck that wants the bad publicity card but doesn't want the bad publicity. Reclamation Order is an interesting recursion card that, again, saw play in combo decks and maybe could be useful in a long-term Glacier deck for getting money or ash or something, getting those back out of the trash. Blue level clearance is just good. I would click to gain two credits and draw one card all day. And Celebrity Gift is also quite good, paying off at almost hedge fund rate in a faction that might not care if you know what they're holding. But what does Fluffy One think, you ask? Well, unfortunately, only half of these received an adjustment, so I only have comments on half of them. But I will share those. Corporate Shuffle, he gives a 4, where he says, just play Jackson Howard. Sheesh. Invasion of Privacy, he gives a 5, saying if there are no events or resources in the grip, you look like an idiot. Witness Tampering, he gives a 6, saying the only knock is really the fact that it's a double, as the lower play cost and low influence cost are pros. And blue level clearance, he gives a 7. Calling it excellent burst economy. But he likes green level clearance quite a bit more, which makes sense. It also gives you two credits and one card, but it only takes one click, and it costs half the influence. Okay, bad publicity. One of the main themes of this cycle was bad publicity. Of the 30 corp cards in the reboot card pool that have the term bad publicity in the ability text, 21 arrived in this cycle. There are only 66 corp cards for the entire cycle, so the fact that about a third of them key off of bad publicity in some way is pretty significant. Of those 30 cards that exist in the card pool, two we already have in Hostile Takeover and Posted Bounty, the Wayland agendas. And there's quite a bit of variety to the bad publicity interactions that we have available. One group of cards that give the corp a powerful ability at the cost of a bad publicity were the 5 illicit ice, all of them sentries. Each faction, including neutral, received one. As a reminder, here is what they did, or do. HB got Fenris, a cost 4, strength 4. Its subroutines are do a brain damage and end the run. Jinteki gets Shinobi, cost 6, strength 5, and the subroutines are 3 traces, trace 1 for 1 net, trace 2 for 2 net, trace 3 for 3 net, and an end the run. NBN got Muckraker, cost 5, strength 4. It also has, nope, it has, let's see, 3, 4, 3, 3, 4, yes, sorry, it has 4 subroutines. Trace 1 for a tag, trace 2 for a tag, trace 3 for a tag, and end the run if the runner is tagged. Wayland got Swarm, which costs 3 and is strength 5, has basically advanceable subroutines that say you trash a program, or the runner pays 3 credits for each one. Not basically advanceable. They are advanceable. And for the neutrals, we get Grim, a cost 4, strength 5, with the subroutine that says trash a program. These have been adjusted like so. Fenris got +2 strength. Muckraker got +1 strength. Shinobi got -1 cost. Grim got -1 cost. Swarm, -5 cost. So basically, the original designs generally had the res cost outpace the strength. But here we see Fenris is 4 for 4, Shinobi 6 for 5, Muckraker 5 for 4, Swarm 3 for 5, Grim 4 for 5. So it's flipped, or it's not that different. So that didn't seem to appropriately account for the recurring bad publicity that you were giving the runner to play with. And plus, with Fenris and Muckraker, their sentries being below strength 4, they were just sitting ducks for Mimic sitting decks. Otherwise, it's a fairly powerful set of abilities. They're very nasty to face check, and that seems appropriate, given their pretty significant downside. In Fluffy One's reviews of these cards, he gives Fenris a 7, the only non-Bioroid ice to give a brain damage. Shinobi only a 5, says fun for making news to make up for NBN's laughable ice. Muckraker gets a 6, but that's mainly because it's used in Sizzler. 4 subroutines is annoying for anything other than Switchblade, upcoming Stealth Killer, or Lammas. I don't remember how to pronounce that, which comes in the 3rd booster. Swarm gets a 6. He says the coolest use of a lot of advancement tokens besides a fully loaded woodcutter, especially with views building, or because we built it and commercialization. And Grim gets an 8. Excellent Mimic tech and very good at being a high-strength roto turret. He also makes lots of references in there to Sizzler, which is the NBN ID from the 3rd booster that gives you the ability to gain a credit and remove a bad publicity every time you score an agenda with a different name, so it likes the illicit ice. All right, so there are 5 of the 21 cards that say bad publicity. Another group of cards that give the Corp a powerful ability at the cost of a bad publicity were the 5 agendas that most factions, including neutral, received. HB got Project Ares, a 4-2 that trashes an installed card for each token over 2. So at least 2 cards are going to get trashed. Jinteki gets Clone Retirement, a 2-1 that if it is stolen, makes you have to take a bad publicity. Although, if you score it, you get to remove one. NBN did not get any. NBN just doesn't get bad publicity from their agendas. Or maybe Wayland got NBNs. You've got Vulcan Cover-Up, a 3-1 for Wayland that does 3 meat damage when you score it, although you have to take a bad publicity when it's stolen. Also, Wayland gets Geothermal Fracking, a 4-2 big economy agenda that gives you 2 agenda counters, each of which give you 9 credits and a bad publicity. And the neutral card Profiteering is a 3-1, and when it is scored, you can take up to 3 bad publicity and get 5 credits per bad publicity. So it's a quick 15 credits at the low, low cost of 3 bad publicity. Now here, we don't see a lot of similarity at all, even in the way the bad publicity is acquired. 2 of them, you're just running a risk to get the fairly strong ability. 2 of them are significant burst economy. 1 is a pretty decent attack. I don't have too much more to say about that, because generally I just don't play with bad publicity. I haven't played around with it very much. Here are the reviews from Fluffy One, though. He gives Project Ares a 4, can deliver huge blowout moments, but requires a bunch of work. Vulcan Cover-Up a 5, good, but the bad pub is a deal-breaker, to be honest. And Geothermal Fracking, which he refers to as 2 hostile takeovers stapled together, he gives a 6, calling it one of the better Wayland 4-2s. All right, now we've covered 10 of our 21 bad publicity cards. I suppose we could fit in with these agendas, kind of, is HB's Hellion Alpha Test, a 1-cost operation that could only be played if the runner installed a resource the previous turn, which is kind of a weird restriction. And it does a trace 5, used to be 2, now it's 5, to add an installed resource back to the top of the runner's stack, but if it's unsuccessful, it gives a bad publicity. So it's fairly decent if the resource you can remove is something like professional contacts, or if the runner ponies up 5 credits to keep professional contacts. That's not quite as good, but it's not terrible. Although if they do that, you get the bad publicity. A Fluffy Run 1 rates it only a 3, or he bumps it up to a 4 if you include the artwork. And I guess we should mention NBN's invasion of privacy, a zero-cost double operation that also goes after the runner's resources and events, but trashes them directly from hand, depending on how strong you boost your trace to. There is, of course, also the new Wayland ID, Grendel, that just gives you a bad publicity at the start of the game, along with your buckets of money. So we see clearly a little Wayland theme, right? We can trace it from hostile takeover to geothermal fracking to Grendel. Honestly, profiteering really feels more like a Wayland agenda than a neutral agenda. So now we've seen 13 of our 21 bad publicity cards. Another subset is those cards that let you remove or avoid bad publicity, which to me kind of feels like an important thing to do if you're using bad publicity in anything but a rush deck. So we could put in Clone Retirement here because it will remove bad publicity. But once again, each faction, including neutral, gets a version of their own to use. The HB one is Rex Campaign, a 1-cost asset to remove 1 bad publicity after 3 turns, or gain 7 credits. Probably you're going to gain the 7 credits. Jinteki has Restoring Face, a 0-cost operation that removes up to 2 bad publicity, although you have to trash a sysop, an executive, or a clone. NBN has Broadcast Square, a 0-cost asset to use a Trace 3 to dodge bad publicity. Wayland has Elizabeth Mills, a 1-cost asset that removes a bad publicity upon rezzing, although she's also there to trash a location, then that gives you a bad publicity back. And naturally, because Wayland has such bad publicity issues, they get 2. They also have Witness Tampering, the 1-cost double operation that removes up to 2 bad publicity, with no downsides. And the neutral veterans program is a 3-1 agenda that will remove up to 3 bad publicity. So now we've covered 19 of the 21 cards, so finally, a couple that interact in some way with having it. In a good way, you have Wayland's IRS, an advanceable, sort of, code gate, with a res cost of 0, a strength of 4, that gains a subroutine for each bad publicity. So basically that negates the bad publicity, although you did spend a credit to place the ice in the first place, or whatever ice comes after it. And the not at all good is the neutral NAPD contract, a 4-2 agenda that's best known for costing the runner an extra, used to be 4, now it's 3 credits to steal, but also increases your advancement cost by 1 per bad publicity. So don't use this when you're voluntarily taking it. All right, and that is finally all I have to say about this pack and this cycle for the corpse. And many of the cards referred to in this episode are linked in the show notes. Please join us over at the Reboot Discord server. Links are in the show notes. Or you can contact me via any of the links in the show notes. The AstroScript pilot program this time around is a continuation in the worlds of Android. It is The Network, Part 3. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Reality Augmented. By linking the world together via the network, everyday life is once again conducted seamlessly and wirelessly. The technicians at Sync and NBN have made the network work for the citizens of the world. The network looks out for its users, ensuring their health and safety and happiness. And a majority of users across the world consider the network indispensable to the everyday functions of their lives. Personal access devices. An individual's personal access device, PAD, is his gateway to the network and his key to functioning and participating in modern society. Everything can be custom-tailored to suit his particular preferences, ensuring he only sees what he wants to see, from advertisements to promotions, media feed channels to news, and other status updates on the things in life that matter to him. A pad renders its information in the way most convenient to the user. Some prefer reading on old-fashioned physical touch screens, while others are happy to use gestures to interact with an overlay of vert displays holographically or over their lenses. Sophisticated secretary AIs allow users to interact with their pad with voice-only commands. Enormous corporations compete to cater to every form and flavor of pad imaginable, so long as there are credits to be earned by its creation. In connected cities like New Angeles, almost everyone has a pad. For those who refuse, there are still public access terminals, PATs, for temporary network access. Instantly accessible data. A pad stores all of a person's important information to ensure that he never leaves home without his personal or financial data. His hopper or health insurance is quickly readable by the Skylane Patrol or by emergency services in the case of an accident. All of his contact information is stored and accessible via any device so long as he provides his ID, and he can send information such as his address to another pad with a simple gesture. Sharing and recording information has never been faster or easier, which is a necessity in the enormous, fast-paced city of New Angeles. Credit accounts. Although cash can still be used at select locations, many of them seedy, paper money and checks are incredibly rare in today's market. Instead, transactions are conducted electronically using pads linked to one or more of a user's credit accounts that track her accumulated wealth, investments, credit account rating, and liabilities across multiple financial institutions. Credit account chips can also be implanted beneath a user's skin, allowing transactions to be made instantly and conveniently with the wave of a hand. This makes it easy for clubgoers to automatically pay the cover charge when walking through the doors, or for hopper cab riders to wirelessly pay the precise fare as they exit the vehicle. Thanks to the ubiquity of the network, debits and credits can be resolved in microseconds, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, or more on Mars. The standard currency across the business world is the Titan Transnational Credit. While other national currencies still exist, the credit allows for transactions without the constant need for currency conversion. The influence of the credit extends into orbit, and because nationalities have less meaning on both Luna and Mars, the credit is considered standard in the colonies. Credits have no physical representation and are purely digital in nature. Credit transactions rely on digital signature verification at Titan Transnational Headquarters in New Angeles to log and record the movement of each individual credit from corp to consumer and back again. Cred sticks can function as digital wallets filled with specific amounts of credits, but their relative anonymity makes them popular among black market merchants and org crime outfits. Titan Transnational defends the untraceability of some of their credits as a valuable service they provide to all their customers, most of whom are perfectly law-abiding. Endless infotainment. NBN estimates that it generates more content in a given day than a normal user could consume in a year. But given the immense diversity and size of its consumer base, there exists even more demand for fresh and exciting new shows that promise something unique and different to keep the world's masses entertained. Given the immense volume of media available, there's hardly any reason for anyone to be bored at any given moment. No matter whether one is riding the tube lev or sitting back while the autopilot steers his hopper, one can always be enjoying a new diversion. People walk around the city with their pads projecting shimmering arrays of color and light, which makes for quite the impressive sight in open areas like Broadcast Square in downtown New Angeles. And when news breaks, the entire world is watching from the very moment it happens. Citizen reporters can submit their own coverage to be included in the official NBN segments, and expert analysts help break down the story for those unfamiliar with the context. Staying in touch. From megastars to average Jose's, everyone keeps an active FriendNet account to automatically share their updates and comments on others' feeds. Even one's friends as far away as the moon are only a swipe away from a vid or odd convo. FriendNet will even track how long it's been since you've contacted or been contacted by your friends, so you'll never forget the people who matter most to you. Users can spend as much or as little time as they like personalizing and perfecting their appearance to create a custom animated avatar that mirrors their unique facial expressions or gestures. Even if you still haven't gotten dressed or put on your makeup, your indistinguishable from reality avatar will flaunt your best to the world. You can use this same avatar to virtually try on outfits, cosmetics, accessories, and even Gmods, as well as receive real-time feedback from stylist secretary AIs who know what looks best for your complexion, skin tone, hair color, style, and personality. Massive social media events bring together billions from across the Earth and Moon to share their reactions to a communal experience and shape the direction of subsequent content. Such events are also a great way to spark conversation with those in close proximity. But if there isn't anyone else viewing similar shows in your vicinity, you can strike up a discussion with any of the other hundreds of viewers who are currently connected to the network. And you can add any of them to your FriendNet circles if you want to follow their posts. Users can be as social and friendly as they like, whenever they want, from anywhere, whether they're at home or on the go. Your pad is ready to help you do whatever it is you want to do.